Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
New bumper music. Enough of that. Joining me from Texas is Tim Lynch. Tim, good morning. How are you?
Hey, just fine, Matt. Thanks for having me on.
No, you bet. And joining me from California is Jeff Kenny. I think he's in California. Jeff Kenny. Jeff gets around a little bit. Jeff, where you at?
I'm in California, Matt. Thanks.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I just had something get on the wrong pipe. I'm good.
That last slug of coffee.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And then you had to talk, oh, no more game, and they're in the rain. Because we've got...
So that laughing gets all the crap out.
So. I know. We got Doc Lynch on, so if you got an issue, we could solve it right now. Are you all right? Timmy, you want to jump in here?
I gave myself the Heimlich maneuver just like Tim taught me, so I'm good.
Are you still good with your medical skills, Timmy?
No, not really. I haven't really practiced them much. I got a little bit of a tune-up in Afghanistan on quite a few occasions, but that's the last time I've had to use them.
Am I hearing bells, or is that feedback?
No. Is my mic picking that up?
Yeah.
That's from outside.
If okay, no, that's fine. I didn't know if it was some kind of feedback coming through the way I had things configured, and I have them the way I normally have them configured. I want to ask you, I want to talk this morning about, I don't know if you guys have followed it, but some really weird stuff coming out of the Navy. And late last week, I want to say after hours, the CNO said, yeah, I'm taking back convening authority from the Southwest Region Command, and they're the convening authority for a series of court martials. I'm taking that back. And then, over the weekend, they announced that they were dropping charges against, late last week, they announced they were dropping charges against a Navy lieutenant who is Gallagher's platoon commander for obstruction of justice. And then over the weekend, they announced they were dropping charges in another case. And so it's just been weird, like stuff you don't see. So I picked up the phone yesterday, and I talked to a number of former military judge advocates, and what I got told was, well, here's what I'm hearing by two of them, and what they said was I'm hearing that there's going to be federal charges referred for violation of civil rights and a series of other federal offenses for both JAG attorneys and NCIS agents. Now, I wanted to just talk about both of your experiences in, you know, with military law. Too heavy-handed? Do either one of you have enough experience with them to render an opinion? Because this is pretty stunning stuff. Jeff, you have enough opinion, enough experience to render an opinion on any of that?
I have a little bit, and I'm not going to mention this guy's name, but he was on the news this morning. I was coming in regarding the Gallagher case. He was a former Marine JAG, who's known. I lived in the same neighborhood with him in Onifray. He's a one meth guy, and he was known for strong defense towards the CO31 because of the Haditha thing. And he was one of Gallagher's lawyers, and then he was about a month and a half or so before the actual, you know, acquittal came down and all that stuff. He goes replaced by the guy that you saw on TV, you know, with Gallagher himself during this whole thing. He's suing Gallagher for some kind of contractual thing regarding fees. And I thought you were going to mention that. I don't know if you heard about that, Max.
I did not.
I literally did not mention the guy's name. He was my kid's soccer coach. He's a good guy, you know. So I don't want to, you know, poison that well or whatever. And I don't really know what's going on. I just know that it's funny you bring that up because this came up, you know. Right. This was on the news this morning driving down here from San Clemente. But I have to tell you, I thought they're inexorable sometimes. Like, in other words, when I was a MESEP, the first MOI I had was a Marine JAG who had gotten the first two death penalty convictions once the death penalty was brought back in the late 70s from two guys at Lejeune for two separate cases. And he still had the evidence there in case he had to, you know, re-provide it for appeals that these guys had. And I've seen them have appeals through the years on C-SPAN, these same guys. And one of them finally committed suicide in Leavenworth. But so he just said something to me that always stuck with me. He goes, you can't believe the tremendous power and weight of the United States government when they come after you. It's almost unbearable. It's like the number of assets and stuff they can muster. And I've always thought about that since then regarding these cases that have come up, some that I agreed with what happened, some that I didn't, and that I was involved. I actually saw things, how they occurred on the ground, and then how they were presented, you know, in court.
Right.
So that's really my only, and I got experience to the point where I character witness testified for the CO31 in regards to the Haditha thing, as did
Dave Furness.
Major General Furness, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. The I'll say one thing. One of the guys I talked to yesterday pointed to the Haditha prosecution and the charging of officers involved in that, and said, in my opinion, that is where this stuff started. They so overcharged that case, and while they may have not, you know, done things by the letter, there was certainly no criminal conviction to be found there.
Right.
And ultimately, that's what happened. He said, but what they did was so heavy-handed, and what they learned is that that's how you need to do business, because of you have a hysterical media on one side, and if you're not searching for the, you know, if your charges don't come close to that headline, then you're excoriated in the news, and we don't want that. And so it was really interesting conversation yesterday. And before I go to Timmy, one of the things he said was, you know who's the best convening authority I've ever seen? And I said, no. He said, General Mattis.
Yeah.
And I said, why? He said, well, interestingly enough, he said, and I attribute this to his experience and oh, by the way, his intellect. He casts the same jaundiced eye on the prosecution as he does on the defense.
Right.
And he said most, you know, the way we got to that was I asked him this. I said, well, wait a minute. So if in fact what he says is right, and what the CNO is doing is he's removed convening authority, right, authority from, you know, regional command Southwest, right, and taking it to the CNO office. He's clearing the deck so when these charges hit people, and one of the commanders down there was, quote-unquote, soft relieved, right? So no end of tour award, no ceremony, right, no retirement, you know, 2 weeks early, somebody else is in charge. So it looks like he's clearing the deck so when these hit, you know, nobody is a commander, nobody's in a position of authority, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
So we were talking about this, and I said, so when you see this shit show ensuing, this overcharging, right, And again, I'll just fill you in. He talked about the, because I talked about this in the first hour, but he talked about the Gunnery Sergeant Felix case at Parris Island. He said, you know, the battalion commander got charged in that. He said the investigation that was ongoing into Felix putting somebody in a dryer in a previous series that he was a drill instructor for, that hadn't been concluded. What he got told, the battalion commander got told, was that the most that would come out of that was a 6105, for those of you old timers, a page 11 entry. And that means that he can continue to be a drill instructor. He's not going to be convicted of any high crime or misdemeanor. So anyway, he said, but the battalion commander got charged. He said, and I want to say the charge was, you know, was murder or dereliction of duty or something substantial. He said they didn't have anything close to that. And when we got close to going to court, guess what happened? I said, well, my recollection is the charges were dropped. He said, yeah.
Because it's got to be damaging when the charges.
Yeah, but he said, but look, Mac, do you think, he said, look, you pay attention on a daily basis. I said, I do. He said, do you think most Marines know how that thing ended? I said, no. He said, what did they know? They know the battalion commander was derelict in duty, and he contributed to his death. He said he didn't. That the regiment was conducting the investigation. He was told it was going to be a 6105. That was the most that would come out of it. That's why Felix was there. He said, but that's not the story that's been told. He said, so these son of a bitches operate in this heavy-handed fashion, catering to the media, overcharging in a hysterical manner, and then they ultimately can't deliver, and that's why you see these things fall apart.
Right.
And I said, whoa. So, Timmy, with all that said, but so what he said about, and so then he brought Mattis up. He said, the best guy I've ever seen at this is Mattis because he makes everybody prove their shit. He casts this wicked jaundiced eye on everybody, right, constantly saying, you need to substantiate that. Where does that come from? You said this. I need that footnote. And he said he's rough on people. He's rough on people. Timmy, your thoughts or your experience, or I'm curious.
Well, we've all done special court martials, right? And my experience was when you were convened to do that, which is a JAG manual investigation in which you make your recommendations about innocence or guilt, punishments, etc. You could pretty much, once you got to the bottom of the story, scope that thing to read any way the hell you wanted it to do. I mean, I'm not talking about clear-cut violations. I'm talking about in degrees of how much you want to hammer this guy. Was this an honest mistake? Was this an omission? Was this guy being a prick? Is he a worthless Marine or whatnot? There was some latitude in there, right. And I believe the reason that officers are trained to do that is so that you understand that as you progress in rank, you're responsible for those charging decisions because everything you said is right. And I remember from my close and habitual association at the FBI Academy when we were at IOC, because I went through their firearms instructors course. The one thing those guys told me over and over again is if you ever get in trouble with the law at any level, but particularly at the federal level, do not say anything ever.
Right.
And I'm like, well, what, but I wouldn't have anything to, but why would I do that? I would never be guilty of a federal crime. The guy's like, look, dude, you're not listening to me. Don't say anything. If they're looking at you, they've got a reason to look at you, and they're not looking for reasons not to look at you. You know what I mean? And right. I always found that to be kind of intimidating, but I've never been looked at. Thank God.
Well, you know, it's interesting.
That special court's like a high-octane NJP, though, really, you know?
Right.
Yeah, but you learn that you have some latitude in that system.
No,
when your captains had two simultaneously for the same incident, and you're right, I learned a shitload during that for sure. Colonel Mellinger retired, Eric Mellinger.
So then the subject came to about the latest SEALs being sent home, right from Iraq, and he said. Look, he said, the reason they all got sent home was because none of them would speak to NCIS. He said, now, Mac, I'm going to ask you, in light of our conversation, right, if something happened, do you think that's smart or stupid? I said, well, I think that's smart now. He said, yeah. He said, what you're seeing is, he said, I would tell you as a defender, it's craziness. They can't prove much of this stuff, but it's all being prosecuted in the media. And he said, so look, I'm not saying that that they didn't drink, that somebody didn't get raped. That will all come out in the wash. What I am saying is that there's a problem in the system. He said, I would tell you that the system's actually sick.
Yeah.
And he said, and that's why I am very, very pleased to see the CNO going to do an inquiry into the JAG system and NCIS to see how sick the system is. Because, you know, hopefully he's hearing this from the right people. He said, because at the end of the day, and this is interesting, you can both comment on this after I throw it out, but he said, look, the death of that staff sergeant in Mali,
right?
He said, those guys are charged with murder. He said, now, he said, you follow that, right? And I said, yes. He said, look, based on what you've read, just in open sources, do you believe they went there that night to kill that guy? And I said, no. They went there to do something stupid. He said, absolutely. And somebody will be held accountable. But they've been charged with murder. He said, you know, as a prosecutor, you're supposed to seek justice. He said, and what I've seen, you know, he said, starting with Haditha, is this hysteria that's fueled by the media, he said, that the JAG Corps doesn't push back on. They don't do the right thing. They overcharge, then they can't deliver, and that's why this shit falls apart. And he said, if you look at it, he said, and he said, look, they couldn't bring the CO of the USS Fitzgerald to trial. Because, I mean, it's all fucked up. And he said, so that had to be dismissed. He said, it's a joke. He said, and even if you go back to the Marine Corps stuff, you know, the stuff General Amos said, you know, when the sniper thing went on. He said, so there has been big problems with high-profile prosecution. Part of it is the conduct of it. Part of it is the charging of it. So anyway, Jeff, your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, I really agree with you. And I had some of those... the sniper guys working for me at EOTG TUMEF. I didn't talk to him about that.
Before or after the event?
After. And so I didn't talk to him at all about it, but they were, you know, they were solid guys. You know what I mean? And that was, I think General Waldhauser was following the General Mattis playbook on that one, you know, and, he was really the antagonist against General Amos during that incident, right? Because he was one MEF, and obviously General Amos was a commandant and so forth. And I think some of our general officers at the high levels, I'm talking particularly commandants, they really get they get flustered at the disapproval of members of Congress, right? And I think, you know, that I don't know if they should have a course on it or whatever, saying that remember who you work for. You know, I mean, you know, I've seen it both at a very low level and I've seen it at the highest levels, where the idea that something's going to look bad unless you crush a guy leads to injustice. I mean, injustice. And I remember we had a guy who I inherited when I first took over as being the ops over of the 15th MU, who got home and found out his wife had been cheating on him. And when he found out about it, and she told him, he had a vase of flowers for her he bought. He smashed them on the deck. He was a Mexican-American. She was a Mexican national. Stormed out of their apartment and said, I'm divorcing you, and you got to go back to Mexico. Well, that terrified her. So she got in with a little clutch of other wives from the old country, and they said, you need to call the cops and say he hit you. And then, you know, you won't get deported. And she wouldn't have got deported anyway, but this is, you know, a tale of ignorance.
Right.
So the guy ends up going to jail. And my best friend from my enlisted days, at that point, was assistant DA for Riverside County. And I said, hey, man, this does not seem right. And here's something else. She called him that night in jail and said, I'm sorry I lied about you hitting me. And so the cops are, like, wanting to let him go because they listen to those conversations, right? DA, assistant DA in San Diego County said, no way. You know, we're going to get this guy. And he had done nothing except break a vase in an apartment he was paying rent on, and the vase is something he bought. And I'll tell you, it took months to get him out of that shit. And finally, and I mean, working with my buddy, who was kind of like unofficially talking to the assistant DA folks in San Diego, finally, he had to plead guilty to misdemeanor vandalism. And because we were worried that he's not going to be able to carry firearms in the state of California, right, and that means he's done as a Marine, you know. And so I just thought to my, I mean, I never put my alphas on so much as during that time, you know, when I was in the fleet, as during that time to go down to the courthouse and stand up for this guy. But, you know, and then it struck me, I see it at different levels where because of the way something's perceived, you know, there's a knee-jerk reaction that the guy's not important. I remember the discussion with the MU command element. The MU sergeant major and the MU XO are like, hey, you know, this guy, we got, and I'm like, hey, wait a minute. Who gives a shit, and this is going to sound bad, but I mean, this is in the dawn of the war. The OAF-1 had just completed. It's in, like, August of 2003. I'm like, who gives a shit about her? This guy's our guy. We got to stick up for him. And the MU commander then, and you both know him, who's, you know, a hard guy to work for, but he got all motivated by me saying his face turned red. He's like, you do it, officer. You do what you got to do, which I appreciated, but... the first reaction is not loyalty to your fellow Marines when we're talking about those folks. They come up with this mythical, I got to be loyal to the service. That's poison, man, because all the service is a conglomeration of us guys in it.
Yeah. To me, let me let you go ahead.
Tim.
Earth to Lynch.
Oh, sorry, I had you on mute because my dog was barking. I was gonna say back when I ran a 2MEF SOTG, because I had the special missions branch back in the 90s. I had all those guys who had been on the 60 minutes blood pinning ceremony. Remember that?
Right.
From Third Recon, from Third Force out in Okinawa. All those guys were my instructors, and back then, I mean, the 60 minutes tape was kind of vivid and bloody, but you know, eventually those guys got sort of unscathed. I don't think they ever progressed any further in the Marine Corps, but they eventually were worked back into the reconnaissance community, but after spending a couple of years at SOTG, because, I mean, the fact of the matter is, they were doing what they'd been taught to do for a long time before, and nobody felt really particularly comfortable hammering those particular guys because they happened to end up on a CBS news show.
Right.
So it used to work that way. It used to work that way.
And that was the same time period as the tailhook, where they all that stuff, all those horrible things, and I remember the two Marine captains, pilots, under the gun especially, and they both, well, there's no evidence on them. It's all, you know, it's just all hype. Just like Mac was saying, it was like they had done nothing. One of them wasn't even there on that seventh floor, wherever it was.
And I included that into my letters, mentioning, attesting to these guys' character, because I was very, very much on top of all that kind of stuff. But there was a time when you could influence the system like that, but now that you have the 24/7 news cycle, because remember back that, we're talking, what, 96? They didn't have it back then.
Right.
Now that you have that 24/7 news cycle and whatnot, it's completely out of control. Because this damn SEAL case is the wrong damn case to make a big lesson about prosecutorial overreach. It just seems to be a never-ending bad deal with that damn thing.
Right. Right. You know, it's
bad guys out there who need to get prosecuted or wearing our uniform. But if that's what it is, then that's fine.
Right.
But if it's like, oh, we have to control perception, because perception is reality, and we gotta make this right. We gotta what message are we sending? All those poisonous phrases that end up some guy getting screwed who doesn't deserve to.
Yeah, you know what? I hate perception. I hate that statement. You know, perception is reality. Oh, no, it's not. You perceive right now that you're safe in this room, right? But if I pull this .45 I have in my waistband out and shoot you in the head, guess what? You're not.
Yeah.
So your perception isn't reality. It's what you perceive, which may be completely divorced from reality. Like, the world perceived that there wasn't 6 million Jews being, you know, gassed during World War II. But guess what the world found out? That wasn't true.
Right.
And people, oh, no, perception is reality. My fist balls up involuntarily, and then I do my breathing exercises, and it relaxes. But I just want to talk about, you know, it's really interesting. Justice on one hand, our elected officials on the other, right? And then you have the media.
Yeah.
And then on a fifth hand, a fourth or fifth hand, you have social media.
Yeah.
And you have this toxic cocktail of shit that pushes against. And again, if you just use the Mali incident, that is a clear case of manslaughter, right?
Right.
But they're going to be charged with murder. And how does that make sense? It makes sense when you see the hysteria. But there's supposed to be adults in the system that are clear-eyed and say, no, this is what we have the evidence for, and we're not going to overcharge it. And we're supposed to be interested in justice, not this game playing. And so it'll be interesting what the CNO's inquiry finds relative to this trend. Is it a trend of abuse? Which ultimately, that's what's being alleged, you know. And you know, and again, is you know, the thing about urinating on bodies. First of all, you know, did any of us care? None of us cared, right? But that's not the way that we're supposed to do it, and we know that, okay? Yeah. And so the disappointing part was there was officers and senior staff NCOs in the picture, right? And so they're supposed to rein that shit in. And the reason they're supposed to rein that shit in is because, right, the trail that gets you to do really bad stuff starts with small transgressions.
Yes. And it's for the guy's sake. It's
exactly.
For the dick's sake who's doing the pissing, not for the dead guy, not for, you know, you're absolutely right, Mac. And they kind of hit on it in the PS, you know, in the post-traumatic winning thing, you know, that
right.
Part of it, where the idea is for the guy, because somewhere down the line, it will come back to him and come back hard. It may. So just for his own welfare,
right.
His own
right.
Mental future welfare, you don't allow it.
Because you've got to live with your shit forever.
Right.
Right. And we, as leaders, have to be savvy enough to rescue them from their more animalistic human impulses, and we've got to be steadying
right.
presence with that steadying hand on their shoulder. We have to be that.
You rescue him today, he may do the same thing for you next week,
right?
Because you may be the one who's pissed off and fuck, you know what I mean?
Right.
That's the truth of it. Like, it's all, you know, it's less of a rank thing than it is of a somebody's just not in that fucking in that emotional, you know, whirlpool. And you're standing out of it, you go and say, wait, gents, no. You'll regret this later on. Or don't even do it that way. Say, hey, motherfuckers, what do you think you're doing? Put your fucking pants back on you. And, again, you know, get back to doing your work. We still got security to worry about. Or whatever it takes.
Right.
But, you know, you don't allow it. You don't allow it because it's for their welfare and for yours.
And I got to add, this is the important stuff, right? This is why it's so critical to talk about discipline and about the system functioning correctly and about ultimate justice being served, because what we're talking about is damn serious, and I don't think people understand how easy it is to slip over that damn fuzzy
yeah.
line that we toe, because it's friggin' easy. It's easy, and it only takes one slip up, and you're down the slope, and that's no place to be. That's not where anybody in America is going to tolerate that kind of crap.
Right.
And guys, at Ganjigal, the way that the fucking Taliban finished them off, to look at them and then to see these wounded Taliban guys who were in the hands of the ANA, it was, you could understand atrocities, you know what I mean? And so I look at it now.
Jeff, explain, because some people might not understand exactly what you're talking about.
Well, Ganjigal, when Corporal, that now Sergeant, retired Meyer, got the Medal of Honor, it was during an incident that happened near the Pakistan border in Kunar province, in a place called Ganjigal. And what it was supposed to be a key leader engagement. You go in and you meet village elders, and you go in armed because it's a dangerous place. And it turned into an ambush. Three Marines and a corpsman were killed, 12 ANA and 8 Afghan border police were killed, and an undetermined number of Taliban guys. But that happened, and I got there as it was ending, and we were bringing the bodies back in. So I was one of the guys who identified them, me and Meyer and the team leader who was wounded. And it was just, and then right after that, and these guys got put on Blackhawks and flown straight to Bagram, the dead guys. We were trying to get permission from the Army to use their portable morgue there at that firm base that was outside of Ganjigal, called Joyce, and because the dead Afghans were in SWA huts, you know, Southwest Asia huts. And there were wounded Taliban, captured and wounded Taliban there outside, like queued up, like kind of like a triage line and everything. And you could see where, you know, where atrocity could happen right then, because those 12 dead ANA and 8 dead, you know, ABP guys, it was a very emotional situation.
Explain emotion. Explain the condition of their bodies.
They had just emptied AK-47s into their head and faces. And so they're almost unrecognizable.
And so I think about that, right? Now, I want to take I would easily say the top five images that come out of the Vietnam War are of a South Vietnamese. What was he, a colonel when he shot that?
He was a police colonel. Yes,
police colonel under his absolute authority under martial law, finding a combatant in civilian clothes, executes him in the street, and he executes him. He turns and boom, and he shoots him. Now, I don't think you can understand that, and certainly the American public and the world recoiled as they watched that. But when you hear Jeff's description of what those guys looked at, you could do that and it would not even faze you an instant. You'd be eating a ham sandwich, pause, boom. Maybe you wouldn't even pause eating the ham sandwich, boom, and just continue on with your day. That's how little it would bother you when you live in those circumstances. Am I right?
Yeah. Yeah, I have to tell you, the Army brigade commander was there, too. Now, him and me and the Army Sergeant Major and...
the U.S. Army Sergeant Major.
Yeah, and U.S. Army. They own the battle space there, RCE. And the team leader was wounded, and he had been shot, and he had to have his arms straight up in the air, kind of like Stonewall Jackson. So we loaded those guys in. And I remember, we looked at each other, and it was... I had been in combat, you know, multiple times before that in Afghanistan, in Iraq, but that was the first time I ever saw Americans who were, you know, they were all wounded, and then they were either dead already or whatever. But the guys just shot into them, and then Meyer came and chased those fuckers away or whatever, and managed to pull them out. And you know, it was I give them kudos for that, because they owned that area, and those guys went down, you know. It was just awful. You know, it was just awful. And you can understand, you know, the especially since they're going in there, key leader engagement, the idea is set up a kind of like a med cap, den cap for that little town. That town was Taliban owned, though. You know what I mean?
Explain med cap, den cap.
It's where you use your security, and we were doing this before Vietnam, but that's when the phrase first came up. Medical... I don't remember what CAP stands for. Maybe Timmy can help me with that. But what it is, basically, you go in there and you give basic medical treatment to people like in a village, a poverty-stricken village. And like simple stuff. People come in, they got like a, you know, impacted wisdom tooth, they'll take care of it right there. You know, or, you know, and other things like a kid's got, you know, needs ointment for a rash, or you know, or some little things that are basically almost death sentences sometimes for people in a primitive environment, can be easily fixed. And it's a huge. We did them in Iraq. We did them in Afghanistan. We started doing them that I know of in Vietnam. Probably been doing it since we could do it. Like, I mean, during World War II, but it's very effective in the hearts and minds thing. You know, because. You know, it's a big winner with, you know, you're helping little kids,
right.
You know, yeah, the whole thing.
Right. So I mean, we did them in Iraq and we brought, and you know, the reason I remember this was because of the things that the Marines said who were providing security. So, you know, and whenever you do this, it is a target for the bad guys. And obviously that's what happened in Afghanistan. So we're doing one, I want to say it was in the vicinity of Karma, which is north of Fallujah. So, we fly in every female doctor, Navy, Air Force, Army in the region flies into Camp Fallujah. Actually flies into Takadam, helos to Camp Fallujah. You know, we have a shit ton of security because we're going to do this key leader engagement with the approval of the village elders, yada, yada, yada. So we got the site, it's secure, and we launch this thing in the morning with a shit ton of security. So the Marines are there, and you're worried all day, though, that somebody's going to walk in there with a vest on and going to, you know, kill all these, you know, women, children that get in lines. And you just sit there with your stomach in a knot all day as the patrols go out, as the ISR gets overhead, right? And you're just saying, okay, two more hours, boys. You know, so they come back, and I remember when they came back, I saw a couple of the leaders, and I said, hey, man, awesome job today. And we shake hands, and I said, how'd it go? And they both said the same thing. They said, hey, sir, it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you know, these women had never been seen by doctors.
Right.
And they were in tears. Mothers with their you know, their young daughters, right? Mothers, some had never been seen by, you know, they've been treated by midwives after having, you know, children, and they have these things that we easily can fix, and they did. And it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. And so that's why the power of these things, as Jeff said, that go back to our experience in Vietnam and what MedCap, DenCap is, and which is, again, the nature of the Dakota Meyer story. So you go there in peace, as Jeff was saying, right, to do good things, to try to flip the village, you know, or at least get your foot in the door, and that shit works, you know, because they can say a lot of bad stuff about you, but, right, when you're helping their kids, when you're saving their lives, and you're doing that on a consistent basis, and those people go back to the village, and then in the conversation, people are saying, yeah, those Americans are assholes, and then somebody stands up and says, hey, look, all I know is that my, you know, two sons are alive today because they flew them to their medical facility, they did surgery on them, and they saved both of them. And they treated me with respect there. I was allowed to worship there. They fed me. They gave us these things. And so, like, they're not as bad as everybody's saying they are. And that's huge, right, Jeff, in the environment that you lived in?
Yeah, but I look at it differently. I think that should be a carrot.
Right.
And if we fucking do good, then we give them the MedCap, DenCap.
Right, right.
Because we're good to everybody. Right. That's not smart.
Right. No, it should be a graduated plan.
They'll look at us like we're just more, like we're just, you know, saps. You know what I mean? Like a sucker born every minute. Americans are all suckers.
Right.
But you do it when they show some kind of good faith. You do it as a reward.
Right.
Like if you get shot out from a village, I'd burn that motherfucker and not let any drinking water in until I fucking give up the guy who did it. And then I give him MedCap, DenCap. Because we just act like, you know, whoever it is, whoever needs help, no matter what the fuck you did to us last week, we're going to go ahead and give it to you because we're Americans. Well, I say fuck that noise, man. I saw those four dead guys and a lot of other dead guys. And I'll tell you what, when you're doing counterinsurgency, you got to be serious. But the carrot has to taste good and your stick's got to hurt. And I'm not talking for the bad guys only. I'm talking for the regular folk who look the other way and shit.
Well,
they got to ante up.
And that's the majority of people, and that's the hard part of counterinsurgency. You have those people, and put yourself in that situation. All they're trying to do is survive, right? They've got the Russians, then they've got the Americans, they've got the Taliban, the Americans come and go, you know, and the Americans say this shit. And, I mean, a lot of them in Iraq would say, are you going to stay this time?
No, motherfucker, we don't live here. We're going to train up your guys to take care of you.
Stuff in the Cornwall.
And then we're going to leave. Your guys do it. You do it. We're going to help you learn how to do it and be able to do it. We're going to give you some weapons and shit. Then you do it, because this is your place. I'm not asking you to come defend Springfield, Massachusetts, or fucking Glendale, Arizona.
No, you mistake my point, right? So you roll into a village, and they ask you how long you're going to stay. And they said, because see that family? They helped you last time, and when you left, they all got beheaded, and their bodies got hung in the streets, and we got told not to move them. And yeah. So we want to help you. You're the only people that turn on the power, that turn on the water, but when you leave, we all get murdered.
Yeah.
And the problem for us in Iraq was Don Rumsfeld's plan, we didn't have enough dudes.
Right.
And so we'd go there and we'd leave and they'd get the shit. So they're in that middle ground. And you can hear Jeff's frustration, right?
Yeah.
Right? We'll help you, but you got to help us. Their lament is, I can't help you because I'll get my head chopped off and my family will. And I want to. And I know we don't understand you. You people come, all you want to do is do good stuff and give it to us and then leave. We don't rightly understand that. But I can't do that because if I do help you, right, they'll behead my family. And I can't do that. And so, yeah. Right, so...
Hold on a second. Let me back off a little bit because the MedCap, DentCap thing should only be done if you want to raise intelligence for your operational planning. If you think those people in Ganjigal gave a shit about us offering them dental and medical care, you don't understand the people of Ganjigal. They didn't want it. They didn't want anything to do with us. They think that we're idiots for giving anybody money in a paved road to begin with, and Jeff knew that before that shit even went down, as did Dakota Myers. Am I right, brother?
Yeah. Everybody
The colonel is different. People are different. The hill pashtuns were different than the people down in the valleys. You're describing your average Iraqi that's
right.
a Sunni in a predominantly Sunni area,
right.
But that's not true of pashtuns at all. And a lot of those guys will take advantage of you just because you're an infidel and you happen to be around and they can take advantage of you. It's like moving on to the plains when the Comanches were active. You don't go to the Comanches, they're not going to fuck with you. No, you got to watch who you're bringing that dental and medical care to, and it's got to be targeted, and it's got to mean something. You just can't throw that shit out there because you think this is the next village on a hit list, which is what they were doing.
You know, Tim and Mac, I was thinking about this issue this week because, I mean, it's part of the job. I'm, you know, training advisors here, and this type of discussion comes up a lot. And the idea that... if you look at the raw reportage of what happened when we went into Iraq, and Mac is absolutely right, this ridiculous idiocy of
hold on, hey Jeff, hold on, you're coming in a little bit weak. I mean, I know you're in your car, but could you get your microphone more near you?
How about this?
Go ahead.
Okay, so it's like, yes,
better.
The crowning idiocy of when we first went in there was we weren't going to stand up the Iraqi security forces, and we weren't going to put any more than, I don't even know, it was like not even 125,000 folks
right.
in the whole country.
Right.
Recipe for disaster. Once they went to the idea of standing up the Iraqi security forces, you still needed more folks till they got on their feet. And then we weren't, it was a good idea to do that, but it was executed badly. You know what I mean? It was just not either in Iraq or Afghanistan. Developing their security forces was ill done. Ill done. I mean, and there's a couple of key things. You know, the idea that, I have to tell you, I believe in my heart that a lot of the reason we went in a big way to Afghanistan after the so-called surge in Iraq was almost like a, I mean, everybody could get something out of it that had nothing to do with the success of the counterinsurgency. Like, you could bring in a bunch of civilian advisors. You could bring in a bunch of, agriculturalists. You could have all these battalion commanders get combat fit reps, you know, and it seemed to me that the focus, that the number one priority wasn't standing these guys up so they could handle it themselves. When we left Afghanistan and we left Iraq, they're almost worse off than when we got there.
Because they're much worse off. They're in Afghanistan in 2004, 2005, 2006, you could drive anywhere without weapons or anything. It was, well, not down in the south, not Kandahar, but pretty much anywhere else. No problems. There was internationals everywhere. Japanese were all over the place doing their agricultural work.
Right. It's like our issues are the issues. Like the what happens in America to Americans, even in jobs, you know, that work for the government that are supposed to be focused on what's going on overseas, what happens in America controls everything. I mean, maybe that that's a no shitter. You know, I mean, that's a no kidding. But it's like if you want to change conditions in Afghanistan or Iraq, you can't do things that look good back in the United States just because they look good back to an American, you know?
Well,
that's,
yeah.
Connected to the whole legal thing, you know, that we started this thing with, Mac. You know, it's a good, you know, it's a tough question.
Well, you know what, and again, I think that one of the educations I got when I was working for General Mattis was, like, my only experience with the SJA was, you know, when my Marines, you know, got charged, and, you know, it was something beyond, I mean, it was a court-martial, and, you know, the SJA came in, and, you know, in peacetime, right, the perception of the Marines is, all those guys do is burn people, right?
Right.
That's what they do. When you go to war, you know, I think you truly see the value and the function of the SJA, because, you know, we've talked about this. The line between killing in combat and murder, it's not a thin line. Most guys, I mean, it's a pretty dramatic line that you cross. And so the SJA has a really important function. It supports the commanding general keeping the larger unit's nose pointed into the wind. And you know, again, Dave Furness in the incident in Hamdaniya, you know, that the reason that thing didn't turn out poorly was because Dave Furness, you know, said, no, I want this investigated by somebody external to me because I don't believe them, because I've watched them in the field and I've seen them, and they're undisciplined, and I believe that they could have done this. And so you see the value of it. But what we're talking about here is, you know, the hysteria that comes out of the media, then that hysteria is put on steroids, right? And it's loaded into a hypersonic missile, and it's launched via, right, social media.
Yeah, you're right.
And then what you need is grown-up JAG officers that can look at the facts and say, what do I think happened, and what, most importantly, can I convict this person of?
Yeah.
And
like,
it's
grown-up JAG officers is not, most of these guys, you know, some of them are Marines who became lawyers, like remember old Bob Muse.
Right.
But a lot of them are just lawyers who are wearing a Marine uniform.
Right.
And but it's difficult to get the guy you're talking about. So.
Well, and one of the things that one of the lawyers said to me yesterday, he goes, Mac, the other thing you got to understand is, you know, he said, mechanics, doctors, and lawyers have one thing in common. What makes you good are the number of cases that you work. So if you take your car to a 19-year-old mechanic, you know, you're rolling the dice. If you take it to a 58-year-old mechanic who's been doing it since he was 15, you're probably going to get the problem diagnosed pretty quick, the right work done, and you're probably going to get treated, you know, pretty well, right? The same thing with doctors, right? Getting good as a doctor is a function of how many cases you've worked, right? And you're, same thing with being a leader in combat, right? If you're a novice, you just don't know. And then as you go through those things, you learn. And he said, what I would tell you is, you have relatively novice, you know, lawyers that get put in these high-profile situations, and they don't have enough reps, and they screw it up.
Hey, you're right.
You remember
you're right.
Why they stopped sending lawyers through IOC?
What? No. What? Did we ever do that?
Yeah. Yeah, we had a bunch of lawyers come through when I first joined up at IOC, and they kept on wanting to get out of their law school contract to become infantry officers. And Headquarters Marine Corps was so ticked that it happened like three times in a row. And they said, no, we're not sending you. They can't go and hang out at the IOC anymore. Because there's a long dwell time between their finishing TPS and beginning their
For them and pilots. And so we would round out the class with pilots and... Yeah. And the other,
Yeah, pilots used to pull that, but not that often. But the lawyers was an amazing percentage of them. And that is funny. But let me, you know, the problem is when the media starts jumping and amplifying this kind of stuff, how can you have a professional conversation like you had with Andy Milburn? You know, because Andy's talking about debating, not debating. I mean, this is a conversation that a non-professional who doesn't understand the backgrounds of Andy and you and I and Jeff could very easily blow out of proportion. And
they did, though. Did you hear him? If you read some of the criticism of him, is that he's a heretic. What he's doing is undermining civilian control of the military. And you listen to that and you're like, no, stupid. When you get to that point, you resign your commission, you put your rank on the desk, and then you walk out and you do every possible interview you can do because you believe morally that you're in the right. And those are the guys we need.
You know, I don't
it's that outrage culture in the media that just irritates the hell out of me. Just looking for clickbait because they can turn a great conversation. It was really enjoyable listening to him, by the way. Take a great conversation and turn it into something that the exact opposite of what the intention of the speaker was, and I just get irritated by that.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, and then Mac says to him, well, you know, I remember when General Allen declared for Hillary Clinton. And how he was escorted, you know what I mean? And but that's like, but not like he didn't have to be going after him saying he's endangering civilian control of the military. A lot of people are just pissed because he was, I remember General Allen was the head of IOC when Clinton got elected.
Right.
And they're saying this will never happen. These people they're the dirtiest we've ever. If they get in, they'll be the dirtiest we've ever had.
Right.
You know. And, he's a convincing guy, especially to as Colonel Keenan would call us, promoted first lieutenant.
Well, you know, let me tell you, John Allen is the straight
General Allen, man. He fucking had. I was already convinced. I thought I don't like this Bill Clinton guy. He's a draft dodger. That was my whole thing.
Right.
And then he went through this 5.5 minute speech about how they sucked, and then he ticked things off. And then I'm like, where's that speech when he was standing up for Hillary Clinton? I remember that. I remember thinking, this guy Milburn, man, he got, he's getting like, it's like issues that people have bubbling beneath their psyche. A guy like that, who's just writing a good article, you know, he's highlighting a facet of the coin environment, you know, and all of a sudden, he's like, he's a target for these, barn burners.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah, and well, you know, what's interesting is he writes an article over Memorial Day, taking the president to task for pardoning what he says are war criminals who've been legitimately convicted, you know, and the president's making a political case and talking about pardoning people. And he said, you can't do that. It undermines good order and discipline. And it's like, so here's a guy who's obviously not afraid, right? But he makes this articulate, and what I love about this job and what I do in general is articulate discourse, right, of complex problems, and even among people that disagree. And that's, I think, one of the things that we've all found compelling about, our careers, our friends, because our friends are like Andy Milburn. They're not afraid. They're not afraid to disagree. They're not afraid to fight about it. Right? They're not afraid to fight about it. And so it's interesting though, people of very high rank, you know, we all remember, Timmy, you weren't on active duty, but General Amos went around and did his wire brush routine on everybody.
Yeah.
right?
And I remember reading about that and thinking, I guess he never read with the old breed.
Well,
I
mean, exactly.
What a
like,
idiot.
Well, and, but was that just was that just eyewash for Congress?
Yes. Yeah. So
of course.
It made me really even think less of him than I already did.
Right.
Because that's nothing to do with us.
But and then you saw General Smith when he was the CG of the 1st Division. He got somebody's got some comm issues, but I think it's Jeff. But you heard General Smith, he was taken to task and was accused of undue command influence when he had a bunch of Marines that were accused of hazing and ultimately, and were hazing, right? They're getting people up in the middle of the night, doing all that bullshit. And
yeah.
So General Smith said, I'm not having this. And then it happened. A bunch of it happened again. And he wrote this email and said, hey, look, just so you know, I feel like I came out and gave my intent. I was very clear about it. And I just got flipped off by a whole bunch of Lance Corporals, which is exactly what happened. And he said, and I'm not having this.
Right.
And then he got, and all he did was tell the truth, right? In my opinion, he just called a spade, and then he got drugged through the street for it. And so to me, you know, there's this social media thing, and fuel injected by the media, and there's got to be brakes on it. And it's got to be the senior leadership of the service. There's got to be, it's got to be the senior leadership of the Marine Corps, and it's got to be the senior leadership of, you know, our JAG officers that temper some of this shit. Because again, if what I got told yesterday is true, if there's going to be federal charges against, you know, JAG officers and NCIS agents, I mean, that's like, fuck, are you fucking kidding me?
I don't know, though. Maybe there's more to it.
That's a big deal.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Maybe there's more to it. I mean, you're not getting, you know, the, I mean, they did more than just, I mean, I don't think they're going after him just because they went after this guy.
No.
I mean, maybe they did fast and loose stuff.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. What they did, and again, I'm sure some of it, if it's true, some of it will center on the bugs that got put in that email. I mean, if that's what they're doing, and they haven't vetted that through the convening authority and everybody that needs to know about, that's fucking crazy, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
it doesn't take somebody at that level to address something like that. What you're hoping is he's cleared the playing field so an adult will come in and restore order and reestablish due process. That's what you're hoping, but inside you know that that's probably not going to happen, don't you?
No, I'm still a Boy Scout. I still believe I'm a jihadist, man. I believe like no, somebody will come. There will be an adult. But I will tell you what, though.
I believe with you, Mac. I believe with you because you're my buddy.
I mean, but if they're doing stuff wrong and they get brought up for it, then there will be somebody who will do it right because it's the right thing to do. And oh, by the way, the stick part of it is if you don't do it, you'll end up like these guys.
Right. Right. And but my question to him, the lawyers that I talked to yesterday was. So, who do you go to? And they said, both of them said the same thing. This shit's been going on for years. This hysterical shit's been going on for years. And the convening authorities, the general officers, they're not lawyers. They don't know enough. And so, they ask their legal officer who protects his SJAs. And so, then you go to court and it all gets thrown out. What's wrong with that picture? And it happens over and over and over again. And that's when he made the point about Mattis. That's why Mattis is so unique in that he made everybody go through the ringer. Right?
Right.
Everybody.
I heard this. I don't know if it's true, but I believe it is. That those Hamdia guys,
right.
When they came back and they're in
Irons.
They're in the rig, that he had Christmas dinner with them.
Yeah, no.
He wasn't condoning anything they did. He just... They're all alone, you know.
He alludes to that in the interview we did about discipline, and he said, "Look, I've been taken to task by the compassion that and some of the things I've done relative to pardoning junior Marines."
Right.
But let me tell you who he doesn't give a pass to. He doesn't give a pass to their leaders.
Right.
He will screw them into the deck in a heartbeat. Because at the end of the day, he believes in leaders have the moral responsibility to do what Jeff said, which is, and Tim said a little bit ago, which is to take care and protect them from these things. And when you don't do it, holy shit, man, he will annihilate you for that. But he's not going to annihilate people junior to you that are novices, essentially, and are living in this corrupt world that you've created. He doesn't believe that they should pay for the rest of their lives for that kind of shit.
Now, yeah, but here's an interesting question, though. As this has been going on for years, no doubt when he was sec def, obviously he's well aware of this problem. It's something he's dealt with intimately.
Right.
How far down the list of really problems that the Secretary of Defense needs to get involved with do you think this falls? Because it's a critical problem. I mean, this is a big deal, but I get a feeling that in the long list of big deals, it's kind of slipping down there at the national level, which is a damn shame. Because and if this guy clears the deck and then does something screwy, that's going to be tough to recover from.
Yeah,
and you know they're capable of doing it. Yeah, you've seen it before. You know.
No, it's just interesting. Because we've all lived through these things. You know, Jeff was talking about, you know, the Dakota Meyer thing and Coringall and all the stuff, you know, the stuff that, I was in Ramadi worked for General Mattis, and I think Colonel Dunford handed me a series of statements. He goes, "Mac, take a look at those. Tell me what you think." And it was, I don't know if you remember the incident, but the lieutenant's name, I want to say it was in 2-2. His name was Ilario Pantano.
Yes. Yeah,
I do remember this.
Where the shooting by the car, by the
right. And right. And
yeah.
what he the statements were from the corpsman and the sergeant that were there when this incident happened. I want to say ID goes off, maybe a vehicle-borne ID goes off, and either kills or wounds Marines. I think the Marines were either in his platoon or company. At a snap VCP, they yoke up two military-age males in a vehicle, and they the corpsman and the squad leader, who had been relieved as a squad leader and was his radio operator now, they're standing there as and Pantano says the Iraqis are on the ground, search the vehicle, to the sergeant and the corpsman. They find nothing. So he says, okay, post yourself as guardian angels. And he tells the interpreter, hey, tell these guys to search the car, and they better pull it apart and they better find what's in here. So they're doing that. And then he said one of them made a move for his weapon, and he shot one magazine into him, changed magazines, shot a second magazine into him, and then put a sign on, left the they leave the bodies, put a sign on the vehicle, no better friend, no worse enemy. And the corpsman and the sergeant both write statements saying that both guys were on their knees searching the car when the shooting started. So I remember seeing that, and I was like, holy shit, man. And then we had a conversation about it with me and, you know, my friends, and it was like, you know, you could really do whatever you want to. Just don't change magazines, right? Don't change magazines. Don't, because you can say that, and people say, "All right, not a problem," and you go on. But when you do crazy shit, so then fast forward to I came home. So I come home. I don't know when that happened in 2004. I come home in 2005, and I remember hearing Michael Savage just annihilating the Marine Corps for prosecuting this hero. And I remember thinking, first of all, we all know that there's black and white, and then there's a whole lot of gray, and it's hard. And in an escalation of force, when the sun's going down, and somebody's coming at you, and you're scared shitless, it's a vehicle-borne ID, and you have to protect your Marines, and you yell fire, and then, you know, all of a sudden, when the smoke clears, you're now attempting to save four little kids, a wife, and a husband, after a husband does something really stupid because he panics. And there's guys that live with shit like that. I don't have to, but young Marines had to because they had to make those kind of decisions. So we understand the black and the white and the gray. We don't roast, we tend not to roast guys in the gray area because this shit's hard. And then, but I remember coming home thinking, are you kidding me? That wasn't in the gray area, right? Based on what I had seen And then the guy turned and ran for office based on all this shit. And I was just like, wow. And so the media gets involved in this, and they do with it what they will.
Yeah.
Which is both highly partisan on the good and to the bad. And the SJAs have to be the bulwark, right? They've got to be a stocky, squatty, strong, hard-nosed truth-teller in pursuing the truth. In pursuing the truth. And whether that leads them to a conviction or not, they have to pursue the truth. And to me, it looks like, based on what I'll just give you the sentiment of what I got yesterday. They've got out of that business. They're now interested in convictions to satisfy media and social media. And that can't be the case.
Right. You could end up running a daggone presidential investigation like Bob Mueller does, man. Make a good living doing that kind of stuff.
No, you're right. You're right. I mean, I'm really interested to see the Attorney General's investigation when all the dust settles on that. And if he could just say, okay, the initial shit came from this guy. It got put here. It got funded by this person. It was given to this person. It then got given to Senator McCain, candidate Clinton, blah, blah. Money came from this, and then it went. I hope that he can lay it out like that. Because that, you're right, Timmy, that is a kind of a case study in a whole series of case studies when you're more interested in convictions than you are in the truth.
Well, exactly. I mean, and who are they convicted to? That's the other question. Like, they're doing it for political reasons, not for the kudos of getting a conviction. I mean, they're doing it to hype one political party over another, and that's what seems to have happened in 2016. And then on, through this whole stupid investigation, that's huge.
Right.
And this FBI guys, these fucking FBI guys do whatever, they commit these things that are, if nothing else, totally unethical, and they walk, man, and nothing happens to them. Right. Matter of fact, one of them is suing the FBI
Peter
for
Strzok.
Back pay and reinstatement. And the guy's he's on text. They got to text this guy, basically violating his oath, left, right, and center.
Right, and then he got fired based on the FBI's IG internal IG report.
Yeah.
He'd be stupid if he didn't sue because, I mean, he's got a career and a retirement that are now down the shitters.
But he deserves to have them down the
shitters. I agree with that, but you'd be stupid if you didn't sue, knowing the way these things get adjudicated, that maybe the FBI will settle with you for 3/4 of your retirement. Shit, that's a whole lot better than he's doing now, right?
Yeah, they're doing their best to not let what really happened out. The FBI, I have, as you guys know, I have a jaundiced view of these dudes.
Right.
Since they first got the ability to carry firearms, it's been one questionable thing after another. Their value to us is overhyped, I think.
Did it have a Jeff Kenney's personal philosophy about the FBI?
There's some. There's Donnie Brasco, and then there's Ephraim Zimbalist Jr., and that's about it.
There you go. And the rest of it's somewhere in between.
I left Quantico with, I think, four cases of Golden Saber 45 caliber pistol rounds, courtesy of the FBI. I love them.
There you go. All right. Interesting discussion. But again, that's in the news. I go back to my experience with the JAG. Our guy, a lieutenant colonel by the name of Phil Betts. You guys know Phil Betts?
No.
I'll tell you what, he was a good dude. And I'd sit in on briefs when, stuff would go wrong. He would go down and he would lay out the facts for General Mattis. And Mattis, I mean, he would. He was not, obviously, he's not a shrinking violet about anything. And he was interested in the pictures. He was interested in the statements. Yeah. He was interested in Phil Betts' opinion. But again, he kept it all in almost like little containers. They were all little pieces of this mosaic. Yeah. He had great compassion for the junior Marines that were put in these situations, especially if they were poorly led.
Yeah.
Right? Because he sees.
Did you ever know Will Ferrell? He was the JAG for 7th Marines in 2006.
No.
He was a great guy. Colby Volkey.
Yeah. I know Colby.
great guys.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, when they're good, there's none better.
No, and again, and you see how necessary they are, because you have to constantly reinforce, we are the good guys, right? Yeah. We come in peace. But you can, you know, you could hear the emotion in Jeff's voice, right? Mm-hmm. The intense hatred. When you see somebody who's had a clip emptied into their face.
Yeah.
I mean, and when your business is killing, the easiest thing in the world, let's go find them and kill them.
Yeah. And let's go empty a clip in their face.
Right. And a clip, we'll empty a few of them. And then you think about, right, that colonel in South Vietnam, right, and a bunch of his guys had already been killed, a bunch of civil servants had been killed as these guys ran around the city with their list of people to execute. Right. And they executed not only them, but they executed their families. And so you watch him, right, and it happens so fast if you see the whole video.
Yeah,
right.
Bang.
He's talking, all of a sudden he turns and goes, oh yeah, boom, and he's dead, and then he just turns and keeps going and talking. And
yeah, it's like Air Raid 38 that he shot him with.
Yeah, how could that be, right? How could he do it like that? Well, it's easy. If you've walked in his moccasins, you know how good that felt, and then now I'm on to the next thing.
His name is L.O.A. Malone, and he ended up, he lost his leg like a week later in a street fight there in Saigon, you know, street gunfight with Viet Cong. And then he ended up in the United States. I think he was in D.C. He owned a restaurant.
Right.
No, I was just going to say that. I went there. And he was a general, by the way. General Nugent Long. And I'm looking at the photographs of that incident, right? And the guys that are bringing the VC suspect, they're carrying the .45 by the muzzle that he had used. That guy shot a bunch of kids that were General Lone's adjutant's family. Yeah. I mean, they caught him murdering the family of General Lone's adjutant or something like that. And he didn't hesitate for a second. He just popped them right in the head. But he ran a pizzeria in Alexandria. And in the 1990s, the Washington Post on, what do you call it when you do that now, when you out somebody? Doxed him. Yeah, the Washington Post doxed him in the old-fashioned way in the paper, and he got driven out of town. They protested his place, and they closed it. This is all when we were at IOC.
Yeah, I remember, because we went and picked up Hackworth, Timmy, you and me?
And he talked about him.
Yeah, he said, I ought to go to his pizza restaurant, but I got a PT first. And then we went and picked him back up to bring him down to like a PME in the chow hall at TBS. Yeah,
it's interesting because you know the whole story a little bit different than you know what was portrayed to the American people.
Yeah.
And the
Eddie
power.
Adams said it. He goes, "I felt bad for the guy." You know, he was totally justified, you know.
Right.
I just snapped the picture. And the film was bad enough. But the picture is what most people saw, like in Life magazine and stuff, you know. And, it was
a Pulitzer. It won Eddie Adams a Pulitzer, and he's always said he regrets that picture more than anything else in his life. Because he liked General Lone. He said, no, this is, everybody got this entirely wrong. What went on there was what had to go on, you know.
Yeah.
It was martial law. And they got the guy's weapon. You can see it in the photographs coming up. You can see the weapon the guy had on him because they're carrying it by the muzzle as they're talking to the guy who they've obviously had a little bit of chin music before he saw the general.
Yeah,
and he was like a feel great officer himself
He was.
But I think you know the moral of the story for everybody listening today is the critical importance that you know the legal officers. You know, in the military play, they've got to be beyond reproach, in my opinion. They've got to be the truth tellers, because, you know, the rest of us are novices. But when you sensationalize everything, they've got to be able to sit down with facts and say, okay, this is this and this is this. And again, it just seems to me, based on the conversations I had yesterday with three different people, and then every one of them said there needs to be an inquiry because this stuff has gotten out of control. And he said, look, Mac, you're a novice, but how many of these things lead to the charges being dismissed? And I said, it seems to me that most of them end like that.
Yeah.
And he said, exactly. Exactly.
And I heard somebody on TV saying, a lawyer, you know, saying that the worst thing that can happen is to get over, is to overcharge people because it messes up any subsequent, like, prosecution you want to bring against that guy, you know?
Right.
You really got to be careful.
Well, you know, and one of them pointed out, you know, the Fitzgerald thing. Like, look, they're trying to convict him of aggravated murder, right?
Right.
And look, we all know that they did not go to sea to kill anybody, right? That certainly negligence contributed to that. But he said, can you see how crazy that is?
Yeah.
And then the other one brought up the, you know, it's, I think the SEAL's name is Dadolph, and I can't remember the Marine Gunny's name. He said, but those two guys, they did not go there, right, that night in Mali to kill Staff Sergeant Melger, what's his last name?
Yeah, right, it was a Hispanic guy.
Right, and they didn't go there. And so, but they're being charged with murder, too. And he said, so it's just frustrating to watch this, and you just shake your head. But it's gotten worse over time. And so, so we'll see what happens. All right, yeah, interesting discussion, like boys. Go ahead.
Like aggravated manslaughter is not a big deal.
Hello? Shit. Right? All right. Thanks for the discussion. Interesting, guys.
Yeah. All right, brother.
All right. There you have it. Jeff Kenny and Tim Lynch from Southern California and Texas. Pretty interesting discussion. All right, if you're just tuning in, don't touch that dial. In the first hour, I shared with everybody some audio that I use in post-traumatic winning. And I talk about the rabbi. His name's Rabbi Dr. Abraham Twersky. And Josh Goldman introduced me to him. Because the segment I use is about overcoming adversity and stress, right? But I found a whole series of other clips. And if you're looking for somebody who's wise, who talks about things like anger, right, on love, right, about responding to stress, I would tell you, I'll put, you know, his name and a link to the video, some of the videos in this in the first hour post. I would tell you, you know, check it out. There's only about, they run about 2 minutes, so they're easy to listen to. So I talk about that. I talk about my pen and how happy my pen makes me, right? But I will never be able to articulate for Ken Rogers that the pen I have, made out of wood from Bella Wood, that he gave me, how happy it makes me to have that pen. So I talk about those two things. In the first hour, we go through the news a little bit. And I also talk about what brought on the conversation in the second hour, which was I don't understand what's going on relative to some of the things that are happening late at night, happening on the weekends with the Judge Advocate Corps in Southern California with very high visibility charges that were going to trial that have since been dropped, two of them, all against Navy SEALs. What's going on? So I talk about what different retired and former JAG officers told me yesterday. So I talk about that, which led to the second hour of me talking to Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenny about that. So with all that said, on a Thursday, the 8th day of August. Have a great day. All Marine Radio. Over and out. That's not even a Marine term either, right? Isn't that a cop term? Over and out? I believe when you say over, you're expecting a subsequent transmission from somebody. When you say out, that means I'm done. I'm off the net. So, the use of both is inappropriate, but I do it every day. Maybe I should just say out. But I do play music after, so maybe I should say over. On a Thursday, All Marine Radio. Over. don't forget to live the high life, right? We owe that to those who didn't come back. All Marine Radio, out.